Good evening and welcome to this meeting of Iredale District Council's Planning Committee. We are not expecting a fire alarm tonight, so if it does sound, it is for real. Please leave the building by the rear doors and the door to my right and congregate in the top car park. Ladies and gents, toilets are in the corridor along with water. Please can you ensure your mobile phones are switched off or on silent. We do have a number of speakers tonight. Each speaker will have 3 minutes and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. Do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Lovely. We'll move on to the agenda, which we will be taking in order this evening. Agenda item 1, apologies for absence. Have we received any apologies?
No apologies have been received.
Thank you. Do we have any declarations of interest? Councillor Goodwin.
Thank you, Chairman. Item 7, I was lobbied by telephone. Personal, non-prejudicial, lumpecuniary.
Thank you. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Items 7, 8 and 11, I've been lobbied. Personal, non-pecuniary, non-prejudicial.
Councillor Lucy Shields.
Personal,
non-prejudicial,
and non-financial.
Councillor Andrews.
Item 11, Chairman. Personal, non-prejudicial.
Councillor Maud.
Item number 6 and 7, personal, non-prejudicial.
Thank you. Councillor Jean-Yudin.
Thank you, Chairman. Item number 11, personal non-prejudicial.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Goodrich, do you want to come back?
Yes, sorry, Chairman. I think it's probably going to be the item 11, the Wellham Road, just in case North Yorkshire County Council is brought into the argument. I should declare I am a county councillor. But it's obviously personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary.
Thank you. I'd like to declare a personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary interest in item 8 as a member of Slingsby Parish Council. We'll move on to agenda item 3, minutes of the meeting held on the 19th of February this year. Do we agree that these are a correct record? If so, I shall move them from the chair. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Cleary. Can I put those to the vote, please? Those minutes have been agreed unanimously. Moving on to agenda item 4, urgent business, of which I have none. Agenda item 5, schedule of items to be determined by committee. Agenda item 6, application at Ashfield Country Manor Hotel, Main Street, Kirby Misbiton, pages 8 to 46 on your agenda. We do have a couple of speakers, but I'll hand over to Alan first. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 6 is on page 8 of the agenda and relates to a planning application for single and two-storey extensions to the main building, demolition of single-storey outbuilding and formation of spa pool and pool house, and the installation of 8 accommodation pods at Ashfield Country Manor Hotel. The application was the subject of a site inspection on the 5th of March. The officer report does summarise the main changes in light of the period since it was reported to the February Planning Committee. Just to briefly highlight those, it is the additional conditions numbers 17 to 19 as recommended by Yorkshire Water, and condition number 20 as recommended by the local highways authority in response to the further information in relation to parking provision. I'll just run through a number of photos of the site just to remind members of the site and the surrounding area. First of all, an aerial photo. The main annotation that's been added to the one presented at the last meeting is the location of the pedestrian crossing point, which is to the northwest of the hotel. Highways have requested dropped curbs on either side of the access, and that would allow for safe pedestrian access for those who are parking off-site at Flamingo Land. So that would include all members of staff. There would be no staff parking provided on the application site, and also the 12-bay overflow parking, which is just at the entrance to Flamingo Land, just off this photo in the top right-hand corner, would be where the off-site overflow parking would be for the guests of the hotel. Just to highlight on this photo, there's the nearest residential properties, Churchview to the east, which overlooks the outdoor area in the northeast corner of the site, and also the properties to the south on Shire Grove. So this photo is taken from the public highway to the northwest of the building, just showing what the area at the front of the hotel is, an area that was previously used as a beer garden, and on the western side of this building, where there's a window at the moment, that would become an opening into a bar, and there would be a covered area that would function as an outdoor drinking area on the western side of the building. This photo's facing towards the inner corner of the existing buildings. The single-storey elements, the red brick toilet block and the conservatory would be demolished to make way for the two-storey extensions. On the right-hand side, there is the timber shed. That would be demolished to make way for the detached two-storey part of the building. In the background, you can see the roof of Churchview. This photo is facing east. You can see the ridge lines of the existing two-storey elements of the building. The new detached two-storey element would be a continuation of that ridge line, which is roughly 6.5, 6.6 metres in height. This photo is taken facing back towards where the car park would be on site, so that would be a 16-bay car park. This area would also be where the accommodation pods would be sited in a courtyard arrangement. So moving on to the eastern elevation of the hotel, where the sliding doors are is where the orangery extension would be, and on the outside of that would be a small terrace area linking to the restaurant. This outdoor area, within this area, there would also be a pond and a kitchen garden created. So this photo is just panning round to show the boundary and the proximity of the site to Churchview. The existing boundary treatment, the timber post and rail fencing, that would be replaced by a stone wall, 1.8 metres high, falling to 900 mil in height. Just to highlight the changes to the windows on the existing building, the ground floor window that faces onto the rear garden of Churchview would be infilled with stonework. The window above that would have internal shutters installed. That would be a bedroom for the hotel. The window to the right of that would be obscure glazed, as that would be a bathroom. The window directly below that one would be narrowed to allow for the new boundary wall. So again, this is a close-up of that boundary. There would be a standoff from the boundary created by the reinstatement of the pond and the kitchen gardens. And you can also see the 1.8-metre high stone wall to the rear of Churchview, and beyond that, the roof of the building that's due to be demolished. And finally, just a photo just showing the existing boundary on that side of the site. These additional photos relate to the pedestrian crossing, and this is where the drop curb, as recommended by the highways officer, would be installed to allow for a safe crossing point for those who've parked off-site. And this photo is facing east, just showing visibility at the bend in the road. So moving to the report as published, the main considerations include the impact on residential amenity, particularly arising from the use of the outdoor areas associated with the redeveloped site. The main concerns are loss of privacy and overbearing impact. In addition, there's concerns about noise disturbance. It's proposed that there would be conditions included on any permission granted that would limit the hours of use of the spa pool, and also limit the hours of music within the outdoor areas. In addition, the buildings would be inwardly facing and the courtyard arrangement would look to avoid any noise from escaping from the site. There would also be limits on the hours of construction. In terms of the impact on church view, the concern is the overbearing impact from the detached two-storey element of the proposal. The separation distance between the elevations of the western elevation of church view and the eastern elevation of the new build is approximately 15 metres. It's accepted that there would be some overshadowing of the garden areas, but there would not be any loss of light to habitable rooms within that property. Another concern has been raised about the boundary wall to the north of church view. As shown in the photos at present, that's a post and rail fence. Permitted development rights would allow for a boundary treatment of any type up to 2 metres in height. In this case, the applicant has proposed a wall that's 1.8 metres and falls away to 900 millimetres past the gable of that property. In terms of the highway's impact, there are no objections from the local highways officer. He's satisfied with parking provision and also the additional plan that illustrates the position of overflow parking at the adjacent theme park. In addition, there would be disabled parking adjacent to the western entrance and a valet drop-off point next to the western entrance. In conclusion, it's considered that the development is an appropriate expansion of an established business that would continue to contribute towards sustainable development of tourism in the district. The proposed development would not have an unacceptable impact on the appearance of the site, residential amenity or highway safety, and it is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted subject to the 20 conditions as listed in the report.
Thank you. We do have a couple of speakers. The first is an objector, Mr. David Watkinson. The middle button is that's lovely.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Right, thank you. I am the owner of the neighbouring property Churchview Kirby Mispitton and share two boundaries with the proposed development site. Whilst I do welcome some improvement to the former pub stroke hotel, I have grave concerns about the two-storey building to the rear, the orangery with attached external terrace to the side, and also the general scale and size of the development. All of this will directly impact on the amenity space of my property. If permission is granted as currently proposed, it will contravene the local plan strategy policies SP16 and SP20 for some of the following reasons. 1. The development will cause loss of natural daylight to my amenity space as a result of the two-storey building to the rear. At the height of summer, 50% of my garden will be lost to shadow because of this, and in the winter, the shadow will cover the full back of my house. 2. The development will cause an overbearing presence on my amenity space at the rear, as the proposed two-storey building will be almost 2 metres higher at ridge than my own property. I wonder if a single-storey building would be more acceptable. Number 3. The development will cause noise pollution to my amenity space. No action has been proposed to overcome the principal concerns raised by the environmental report. Also, no reference has been made in the environmental report about the external terrace associated with the orangery. In addition, I also have concerns that an orangery built on the front facade of the existing building is not in keeping with the original building appearance and once again contradicts policies SP16 and SP20. would it be more appropriate to relocate these to the rear of the development, whereas there is no visible impact?
30 seconds left.
As I have numerous concerns, these are briefly my concerns that I've tried to get in within 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. And now, registered speaker, have the agent, Mr. Bramhall.
Thank you. Good evening. Since the last committee meeting, we've clarified our proposals in respect of parking arrangements, which was brought up by members last time. And you've also had the opportunity to see the site and the relationship with the surrounding properties. I just want to further clarify those proposals that have changed the parking. We're proposing that a dedicated car park for the hotel at the entrance to Flamingo Land will augment the existing 18 spaces on site. That's 16 in the car park, 2 disabled spaces, and then there's a further drop-off. No staff parking in the application site at all. Staff will park in the employees' car area on Flamingo Land nearby the welfare facilities. Hotel guests will be asked to park in Flamingo Land or have their car valet parked. And the applicants agree that the provision of a footpath and augmented highways crossing points and drop curbs is something that we would be more than willing to put in to aid the communication between the two sites. Our proposals still include the measures to mitigate the impact of the development on neighbours, which I talked about at the last meeting. We still propose a stone wall between Church View and the East Garden, but we've moderated the height in response to concerns expressed by neighbours. This is to obviously separate the two uses and to try to stop any concerns that have been raised about noise and conflicting uses. We still propose to block up existing ground floor windows, which the officer has expressed again to you, and also put obscure glazing in the upper floors, which is all part of the existing situation. The new building is taller than the existing timber building, but it's not directly on the boundary. It has no east-facing windows, and the building acts as a buffer from the activities that we propose in the central outdoor area and the neighbours' use. This property is an established public house and country hotel. The applicants are proposing significant investment in the fabric of this building and the creation of new employment. We've demonstrated how we propose to deal with concerns which have been expressed, and we would urge members to approve the application in line with the officer's recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to pick up on a couple of the points made in the representations, in terms of the impact of the use of the external areas on the north-eastern corner of the site, there would be a terrace area created adjacent to the orangery, but it's important to acknowledge that this is an established use of the site for a pub and a hotel, and that part of the site does currently form the part of a pub and hotel, so if it was to reopen, the applicant would be within the rights to use that area as an outdoor beer garden, if you will, or similar. So there is likely to be a similar impact regardless of that addition. In terms of the general comments on noise pollution, the recommendation of the environmental health officer has been incorporated into conditions in terms of the hours of use, hours of construction, and limitations on music in outdoor areas. In terms of the ridge height and the the scale of the two-storey detached building, there are photos which attempt to illustrate that the new build would be a continuation of the existing ridgeline. There is a change in level, as members will recall from the site visit, between Churchview to the east and the application site. But in terms of the overall ridge height, it would be a continuation of the existing buildings. So we have accepted that there would be a degree of shadowing to the external amenity areas to the rear of the residential property, but there wouldn't be any impact on the habitable space within the house, and it wouldn't be to a degree that would result in a recommendation for refusal on that particular consideration.
Do we have any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Shales.
I have a considerable sympathy with the owner, I think, of Churchview in different ways. Could I be reminded of the limit, the time limit for music that's being played? And is it going to affect that neighbour very much in spite of the height of the wall or is the fence that's going up there beside the open area?
In terms of the music in external areas, I should correct that there isn't actually a time limit. It's just a restriction that doesn't allow any amplified or any other music within any external areas at any point. So it's not that we're allowing it at certain times of day. It's just not allowed at all in external areas.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim.
Any further questions for the officer? No? Okay, we shall move in to debate, and I'm the ward member for that area. The site visit was a good opportunity to take in the site within the village location. I was pleased to hear that the applicant had included valet parking into the application and that staff parking would be incorporated at their other business. The idea of seeing the pub up and running again would be lovely. With the added complex to the rear, brings a different tourist element to the area. Overall, the project will bring additional employment and tourists also. I appreciate that the neighbour has concerns. However, the building has been a public house for some time, and the building of the wall between the two properties and the blocking up internal shutters and frosted glazing of the windows looking directly onto the property goes a long way, I feel, to making privacy better. The addition of the two-storey building to the rear with no openings onto church view, I feel, is acceptable, even with the bit of overshadowing that will take place. The addition of a condition to include a pedestrian drop curb and installation of a footway between the entrance and the telephone exchange is also welcomed. I therefore would like to move approval of the recommendation. Does anybody else wish to speak on the application? Councillor Paul Andrew.
Yes, Chairman. I didn't go on the site visit, but I know the site extremely well because it's just down the road from where I live. I welcome any development of that site to the extent of improving or at least retaining what is already there. And I welcome the work which has been done by the council, our council's officers and the applicant in sorting out issues. I think that is all very excellent. However, at the end of the day, because I do think that the bulk of the building is rather... It goes beyond what is in keeping with the area, what is in keeping with the original building. I would have liked to have seen a reduction in the height of that two-storey building and perhaps remove it, perhaps change it to a one-storey building. I therefore cannot support this.
Thank you. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies, I wasn't able to go on the site visit due to illness, but like Councillor Andrews, I'm very familiar with the site, and I do welcome the improvement of the site and the expansion of the site to some degree, but I said in the last meeting I had severe concerns about the parking. I hear what they've said about making more parking available and valet parking. I'm still not satisfied, so I can't support it, and I'm sorry, officers, I can't do that.
Thank you. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I did initially have some quite serious concerns about noise, but I'm hopeful that an outdoor pool in North Yorkshire is not likely to have excessive use for most of the year and too late into the night. I believe that the applicant has made very reasonable attempts to address the concerns. I also had great concerns, well, I wouldn't have supported it given the original parking proposals, but I believe that the parking appears to have been sensibly addressed, assuming the proposals are strictly adhered to, especially with regard to moving staff off the site for parking and valet parking. So, on balance, yes, I think I can just about go with that. Given the alternatives, yes, this is a great deal of development and not a particularly big site, but considering that it's well screened behind, I think I can put up with that. And given the alternatives of having an empty pub and another empty facility in a village, and the fact that this is hopefully going to bring in more valuable tourism, I can support this application and I will second the approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm teetering on the balance of support or not support. At the previous meeting, I said that they were over-egging the pudding. They're overusing the site, and that remains the position. Furthermore, my friend across the way there says that the conditions we apply, it relies on people, on the applicant and people using site thereafter, adhering strictly to the conditions. Given a number of observations of previous applications elsewhere in the country, in the area, where we look at traffic and we look at parking, and we as a committee think about parking and think about the problems that happen, and we apply conditions, and they're not adhered to at all, strictly or otherwise. I welcome the idea of valet parking in Kirby Mispeton. I wonder if the good folk of Kirby Mispeton have ever had valet parking before and know how to use it. I'll wait and see what other people say, but I think at the moment they're over-egging the pudding, and I think they need to go back and sharpen the pencil. I will wait and hear what other people say.
Does anybody else wish to speak? Because at the moment I have nobody indicating. And it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll therefore put that to the vote. That application has been approved. We now move on to agenda item 7, which is application at land west of Cayley Arms, Weasdale to Partings Farm, Alliston, pages 47 to 63 on your agenda. We do have a couple of speakers, but I'll let Alan go first.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 7 relates to a planned application for two-bed holiday cabins on land west of the Cayley Arms, Alliston. The application was the subject of a member's site inspection earlier this month. The updates to the report are highlighted in the first section of the report, and the only update relates to confirmation on the length of the hedgerow that is due to be removed to allow for the suitable visibility splays. So just to run through photos of the site, the aerial photo just highlights the position of the proposed holiday cabins in the southwest corner of the application site. I've also highlighted the position of the previously approved agricultural building. The site amounts to 1.7 hectares in total, which as a result of the holiday cabin development would be reduced to 1.5 hectares of land, which would be associated with the grazing of sheep for the agricultural building. The aerial photo is out of date and it doesn't show the upgraded access, which is linked to the planning permission that was granted for the agricultural building. The access is shown here and was discussed at the site inspection, which was attended by the highways officer. The highways officers confirmed that visibility looking west is satisfactory, subject to the repositioning of one of the signs, the existing road signs. But to the east, it would require regrading of the verge and removal of 50 metres of the hedgerow to allow suitable splays. So on site it was highlighted as being roughly from the overhead line right up to the entrance to the pub. So this photo is taken within the site. On the left hand side is the planting which would be retained along the southern boundary. On the western side of the site, on the western side of the site, there would be additional planting screening, so the new buildings would be enclosed in an L shape. So this is facing towards where the cabins would be on site, and then I'm just panning round northward. You can see the change in level of the land; it rises in a northward direction. Just panning round, and this is facing roughly towards where the agricultural building would be constructed on site, the existing planning permission. The site is also within an area of high landscape value, as acknowledged in the report. This photo is facing back towards the top end of the village, and the opening in the hedgerow would be gapped up, and a few metres to the south or to the right would be the opening for the footpath that would link pedestrian access from the cabins down to the public highway. And finally, this photo is just facing from the pedestrian crossing on the A170, facing back towards the application site, and you can just make out the hedgerow that would be removed, and it would be replaced by a new hedgerow within the field. So just to highlight the main issues highlighted in the report associated with the application, the site is within a landscape that is locally valued, but it's considered that the proposed landscape screening would reduce the visual intrusion and allow for a development that would assimilate with the hillside backdrop without breaching the skyline. The position of the cabins at the lower end of the field would allow them to be less conspicuous and would be accommodated within the landscape. There would be conditions would be included to cover the additional landscaping, retention of existing planting, and materials and surface finishes. It is considered that the site would be compatible with existing land use in the adjacent field, so the grazing of sheep. In terms of the highways impact, the highways officers are satisfied. They have acknowledged that there would be an intensification of use, but there would be a maximum of 6 vehicles on site, so it's a relatively low impact on a daily basis. And in addition, there would be conditions requiring the establishment of suitable visibility splays. It's considered that the development is in line with national and local policy relating to sustainable tourism, and taking account of the location in terms of topography and existing and proposed screen planting, it is considered that the cabins could be accommodated without giving rise to unacceptable visual intrusion or an impact on the character of the locality. The development would not have an unacceptable impact on local amenity or highway safety, and it is therefore recommended that permission is granted, subject to the 14 conditions as listed in the report.
Thank you. We do have a couple of speakers. First is Councillor Janet Sanderson.
Good evening, everybody. Chairman. Briefly recapping on my last statement to this committee, my concerns are to ensure that the access to the chalets is securely and separately fenced from the to prevent the sheep wandering out onto the road in an area that sees frequent minor vehicle collisions, and that the land is treated holistically to ensure that any sacrifice of the land and the visual impact on the sensitive ALHB has a good chance of producing a viable and sustainable business for the applicant. I say this with the experience of sitting on this planning committee and determining applications for change of use from holiday let to residential because the business has failed. This is a proposed development outside the village development limit, so we need to get it right, not only for this application, but as it would set a future precedence for anything coming forward in the future for land in the open countryside. As I said before to this committee, I always encourage good business ideas coming forward by local young people, but we have to ensure it is sustainable. At the last planning meeting, I questioned the reduction in grazing land, and the applicant assured this committee that it was his intention only to build one of the three chalets. So looking at the principle of development in paragraph 83 of the revised NPPF, it states it supports sustainable growth and expansion of all types of business in rural areas, both through conversion of existing buildings and well-designed new buildings. The points up for debate here are firstly that the field shows no sign of any business activity taking place, so it can't be considered to be expansion of a business. And secondly, if we have not seen a business plan giving us clear detail of the figures and of the existing business and projected upscale from the proposed new development, how can it be considered sustainable, especially as we now know that only one of the chalets is to be built? Now, it's not my intention to be negative here. I want to see local businesses survive and flourish. But before we can accept development in the open country, we really do need to ensure it is sustainable. And if there's any doubt, and the committee are minded to approve the application, there's a need for a really strong business case to be put forward and well thought out planning conditions attached to this as a sort of safety net. Thank you.
Thank you. Now the agent, Mr. Paul Butler.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Good evening. First and foremost, a little bit of history to this site as we've dealt with it on behalf of the applicant itself. We initially submitted a pre-application advice submission back in April 2018 to establish whether the principle of leisure and tourism was appropriate for this area. It was a positive response, and we were invited to submit a planning application. Following that, we carefully considered the location of these very modest holiday lodges. Initially, we thought to locate them to the west, adjacent to the Cayley Arms, but looking at the topography of the land and the landscaping available, we felt it was more appropriate and more discreet to locate the development in the current position as proposed, principally because it is open countryside, but this application is for leisure and tourism, and that class use is seen as appropriate both nationally and locally in planning policy terms. The topography of the land does lend itself to shielding these cabins very well, and the landscaping, we are happy to accept the condition for further landscaping enhancement and improvement so that the screening can be enhanced further. I must reiterate that this is not a residential application. Residential is inappropriate in this parcel of land. It's outside the settlement limits. This is purely for leisure and tourism holiday cabins. It's there as a diversification, it's recognised as appropriate, and it would bring a very small scale but important addition of revenue to this rural part of Rydale. Certainly it would be attractive for those who have an outward bound bent. It's easily accessible to Dalby Forest and certainly the rural parts of Rydale, and it would also lend itself visitors to attending the Cayley Arms. The footpath we propose runs straight to it. It's just reopened again. I think it would be welcoming of further tourists to spend their money at the Cayley Arms as well. Okay. In terms of building just the one, the applicant is self-building these. So he'll be building one at a time. It's a measured...
30 seconds left.
It's a measured method of building out a very modest three-unit scheme. One at a time, let them out, build the next one, let it out, build it out. Only three are proposed. This is not a forerunner for further development. As the planning officer quite rightly points out, any further development would be on the merits of an application subsequently. I think it's a good use of diversification. We've held careful discussions with the highways officers, and the planning officer's report clearly states everything that we've done. We're happy to accept all the conditions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify a couple of points raised there. The application does remain as a proposal for three cabins, notwithstanding comments about one cabin being developed. It is an application for three, and we wouldn't, the authority wouldn't ask for a business plan for new proposals for tourist development. Under policy SP8, tourism developments in the open countryside, the main test is whether it would have an unacceptable impact or unacceptable impact in terms of visual intrusion or change to the character of the landscape in that area. So those are the key considerations, in addition to obviously the highway safety impact.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I've got a number of questions, some of which may have been answered already, but we'll go there. Can officers confirm whether this qualifies as a small holding or not, given that the size of the field is now reduced to 1.5 hectares? Because right now what we have is just a field and a specific size. So I don't think it qualifies as a farm, but would it qualify as a small holding? Can they confirm that this is definitely outside the development limits? I hear what you say about a business plan. So we haven't checked the viability of this business scheme, and we don't know whether it's going to work or not. So we haven't seen a business plan. Can that be confirmed? And is it possible to condition that all three cabins are built at the same time? Thank you, Chairman.
Chairman, I don't think we have any specific information about whether something's registered as a small holding or not. I mean, clearly it's planning lawful uses as agricultural land at the moment, and it's for the material change of use and the operational development that is what needs the planning permission. Having said that, obviously, it's not that long ago that we approved a planning permission for a relatively modest livestock building for some sheep on the site. I don't think the sheep are on the site at the moment. The building doesn't exist, but the intention is that the northern part of the building still retains for that sheep, those sheep to be kept there, because the building can still be built. And that would be separate from this parcel of land that we're now looking at for the three cabins. The site is outside development limits. I think, having said that, pretty much every application we have for holiday use is outside of development limits, because if sites are in development limits, we get applications for houses. That's the way it is. But I think in the context of this scheme, although it's a relatively modest scheme in the context of some of the holiday accommodations that we very often get applications for, our policy doesn't actually require the submission of a business case. So sometimes applicants will provide one, and sometimes applications come forward as expansions of existing sites, so you've got some certainty there. But I think in terms of this, we have an application which we have to assess against policy SP8 primarily, which is a criteria-based policy. And as Alan's just said, the main criteria tend to be around landscape impact, visual intrusions, those sorts of things, or your normal generic development management issues of noise or access or whatever it might be, ecology, whatever those things are. I think in this case the judgment's based mainly around landscape impact in our view and highway safety issues, and there is a bit of a crossover there because as members will have seen on the site visit, which I think the highway officer attended, which I hope that was useful for members, the eastern facing vision splay to satisfy the highway authority actually required the removal of some hedgerow. I'm not sure if Alan can get the photo back up again, but to compensate for that replanting of the hedgerows proposed at the end of the splay, from my recollection of visiting the site, I think there is already a view of the site over the site approaching from the east from beyond Alliston, because the road dips down into Alliston and then comes back out again, whereas from the Pickering direction, because of the landform and the well-established hedgerows, the site's virtually totally screened. So depending on where you're looking from, there are either already well-existing screened boundaries or some boundaries that are already open and would never be screened because of the landform that you're looking from. So you make a judgment on that score. I mean, our judgment is it's a fairly modest development, so the landscape impact is very localised. So on balance, we've gone with it. And I think there was one other question you said. Building them all together at the same time. I mean, normally we wouldn't, as a planning authority, impose phasing conditions. I think that's effectively what you're talking about. I think the reasonableness of that on a very small development would probably be difficult to make stick if you put the condition on and somebody then challenged it, especially in the knowledge of it being, a one-man band, but a small entity starting up. That's sort of very different from a residential scheme for a few hundred houses where the developer might have a planned phase of build out. So I think for this development, I think a condition requiring something to be built all at the same time would probably not pass the test.
Councillor Mrs. Shields.
The road that runs beside the whole of the site is very fast, as we noticed. And as Gary has just said, it comes down in a dip by the pub and then it goes up again the other side. We did have the member from the highways with us. I noticed here it's got a way to amended documents. Is there anything else that has been added that we don't know about since we had the site inspection, please?
No, there hasn't. In terms of that consultation response, that was in response to the initial proposal when highways had concerns about visibility, which was then addressed by the amended documents that require the regrading of the verge and the removal of the hedgerow. So the documents referred to by this report are the up-to-date version, and there's been no further amendments or additions since the site inspection.
Councillor Potter.
Thank you, Chair. Regarding the existing planning permission for the agricultural building, which says erection of an agricultural building for the housing of sheep. Now, can I take it as read that if that building was constructed as well, it would only be for the housing of sheep and any other use, example, as a workshop or so on, would need change of planning permission?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Are there any further questions for the officer? If not, we shall move into debate. There isn't the local member here on the committee. Would anybody like to take this one? Councillor Potter?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Now then, I've still got some very serious concerns about this site. I know the site very well. I've travelled along this road for 20 years and I know how fast it is. I'm afraid I'm still not happy with the access in such a position close to the brow of a hill and bends. I'm concerned that this is development outside the development area of the village, albeit, as Mr. Housden says, many such tourism facilities are. But again, the precedent of putting a new development onto a greenfield site like this, I have concerns about. I have been made aware that the applicant is previously known to build contrary to plans and to breach conditions. So if this was to be passed, I would be very mindful that the local people would need to keep a very close eye on things to make sure that buildings weren't being used for the incorrect
purpose. Sorry to intervene at this point, but yep. Really that isn't a material planning consideration, and I think, you know, without going into any allegations about those things which aren't part of the development, we can't take those things into account. So you need to strike that from your mind, really, members.
Right, okay. It still doesn't alter the fact that if planning conditions, should this be passed, are in place, then it's up to local people to make sure that they are strictly complied with. I'm afraid overall I'm unable to support this. Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to speak? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Officers are going to be disappointed with me again. I'm sorry, I can't support this either. It's development in an open field outside the development. It's in an area of high landscape value. Diversification, we've heard tonight the agent say that it's about diversification. Diversification of what? An empty field with no building, no sheep. I'm sorry, I don't believe that that qualifies as diversification. It doesn't qualify as a small holding because there isn't enough land. And I asked that question to see if I could draw that out, but clearly I couldn't. So I'm sorry. There's been no business case, and I just don't see how this can survive, either as a small holding. And I'm unhappy that the cabins are going to be built in a piecemeal fashion. So I'm really sorry. I can't support this at the moment.
Anybody else wishing to speak? Because we haven't had a mover or seconder one way or the other. So I will, Councillor Maud.
Yeah. As for diversification, it's not taking land out of agricultural production. It's a grass field. It's very difficult to grow any harvestable crops there, I'm sure. And it's obviously got a very stony subsoil. Sheep grazing and grass is about the best you could get from it. To expand into some chalets would, in my mind, be a sensible diversification to improve the business. But it has its dangers, and but I think just to test the strength of opinion, I'll propose that we accept this. I move approval.
Thank you. I'll speak on this one. I have to say, when it came to committee last time, I was less than satisfied. I didn't think it was the right development on the right site, and was very pleased to go on a site visit. When I got there, I was pleasantly surprised at how well the site was screened from the Pickering side, and that, to be fair, you should be concentrating on the road coming down from Scarborough, and so, you know, your eye shouldn't be taken off the road to that point either with the additional landscaping. It is unfortunate there is going to be some hedge loss, but it is going to be replanted and a footway put in down to the Cayley Arms. To be fair, there is a speed limit of, I believe, 40 miles an hour through the the settlement. The access I was quite happy with, and highways are quite happy with the access that has been put in already, as long as the additional hedges taken out. I'm not concerned that it's about the diversification or the fact that it's a grass field, to be fair, is outside the development limits, as are most of our tourism in the Rydale area. I think, on balance, being asked to build all three cabins together is unreasonable if it's our a self-build project, and I think I would like to second the recommendation of approval, and subject to the additional to the conditions that are on the report. And there we go. Anybody else wishing to speak? Councillor Windrush.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm well aware of the site is the side of the A170, but highways, again, I have no objection, so I'll be tempted to give it the benefit of the doubt, and on balance I will support this application. Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to speak? No, it has been moved and seconded excuse me, for approval, so I will put that to the vote. The application has been approved. We'll move on to agenda item 8, is application at land of east of the Box, Slingsby.
Thank you, Chair. Item 8 is on page 64 of the agenda and relates to an outline planning application for 38 dwellings, including the formation of an access off Aspen Way, Slingsby. The report in front of members recommends a member's site inspection, but I'll just show a couple of slides just to illustrate the land in question. First of all, an aerial photo of the application site. The application site amounts to 1.75 hectares and comprises the two parcels of land shown on the photo. So approximately two-thirds of the way across the site is the existing field boundary. The plans that accompany the application do propose the retention of the planting along the southern and western sides of the site. The proposed access would curve in off Aspen Way. Priority would be given to the vehicles that are entering the development site. Just surrounding land use, you've got the relatively modern residential developments to the north and west, the bungalows of Aspen Way, and the two-storey semi-detached properties at Balkside on the western side of the site. The western boundary, the row of mature planting along the western side, falls within the village conservation area. This is at the southeastern end of the village, and the historic core of the village is towards the northwest. But the boundary of the conservation area is roughly just on the inside of the crown spread of those trees. The application is accompanied by indicative plans that show possible housing layouts, and there are plans that look to secure parameters such as the building line on the western side of the site to allow for a standoff from the conservation area. The land to the south of the B1257 is within the Hawadian Hills AONB. As it stands, the application site is outside of development limits, but the application site is a draft allocation for residential development within the District Council's local plan document, which is currently it's been published for examination. This second slide is just to illustrate the parameters put forward by the applicant, which they would look to secure at the outline stage. So it includes the access, which would run to the east of the frontage housing on the western side of the site. And just the key constraints shown on this plan include the conservation boundary, which is shown there by the dashed line, and also the existing planting within that along the western side and the hedgerows along the southern side, and the field boundary within the site. This plan also illustrates potential standoffs from existing residential properties on Aspen Way, standoffs from the new housing. So the broad grey shaded line, that represents the building line for the frontage on the western side, and the applicant proposes houses that front onto the Bourke, onto the main road into the village. The site is considered to be sensitive in planning terms, given the part of the site within the conservation area and the duty on the authority to preserve and enhance the character and appearance of the conservation area. In addition, the proximity to the main road, the top road where the site is prominent and visible at this end of the village. So there isn't a great deal to add at this stage, aside from the recommendation is for a member's site visit for the reasons given within the report.
Thank you. We do have a speaker, which is the agent, Rebecca Howson.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening. My name is Rebecca Howson and I'm an associate planner at Savills UK Limited and the agent for this application on behalf of Castlehoward Estate and the adjacent landowners. I'm conscious that time is limited and today's recommendation is for a site visit only. Therefore, I will focus on the salient points that we wish members to consider should they vote in favour of a site visit. First of all, it is worth stating that we intend to deliver housing on the site as quickly as we can realistically progress. However, of equal importance is the intention of Castlehoward Estates to deliver a well-designed development which will leave a meaningful legacy value. We intend to exercise control over the design process through contractual mechanisms once a house builder has been selected. The Council should therefore take comfort from this approach and the benefits it can potentially bring to the final development. The site is draft allocated for residential development in the Rydale Local Plan Sites document, subject to policy SD11, which contains an indicative capacity of 36 dwellings. This plan has passed through examination and the Council are currently going through a main mods procedure, which will then be followed by the adoption of the plan. This is an outline application with all matters reserved for future determination, save for access. We are seeking to obtain an outline permission in accordance with the emerging local plan allocation, which seeks to respect the constraints of the site and the sensitivities, whilst at the same time not preempting what a house builder might want to develop in terms of house types. We have worked extensively with officers over several months to establish parameters which provide the necessary safeguards whilst retaining the outline form. It should not be forgotten that the Council always retain full control through the reserve matters process. There are no technical constraints which prevent outline planning permission being granted. All matters have now been agreed with the relevant statutory consultees and are to be controlled via appropriate planning conditions and/or the proposed Section 106 agreement. Whilst a small part of the site falls within the conservation area, no development is proposed within the conservation area itself. An additional safeguarded area is also proposed beyond the conservation area boundary to ensure there are no adverse impacts on the setting of the conservation area in this respect. As above, these parameters will be secured via a constraints plan within the Section 106 agreement. We would therefore ask that, should members vote in favour of a site visit, the site should be viewed in the context of securing those safeguarded areas as demonstrated on the constraints plan. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Yes, Chairman, I just wanted to come back on that because members will see on the number of the application. We've had this outline application some time. It's not been with us a couple of weeks, and it's felt a bit like drawing teeth, to be honest, but we are where we are. The agent has just mentioned the issue that probably has been the biggest issue for us, that this is an outline application. And it's not on a red line round a site application because all matters are reserved. So whilst there's illustrative drawings in terms of layouts, which you might see on pages, I think it's 70, 68, that revised plan is not actually being asked to be approved. It's an illustration of how the site might develop. With that in mind, within the first month of dealing with the application, we actually did submit what's called an Article 3 direction. I might have got the number wrong there, show my age. But it was actually a request that this application include more or some of the reserved matters. So we actually asked for the outline application to include access, layout and scale, so that members would have a better idea of what was being proposed and promoted on the site. The reason for that is, despite what all has just been said, is that this is the planning permission. And if this planning permission has nothing on it that gives a clear indication to a future developer what is expected by this planning committee, you could get anything. And so that's why we're still in negotiation. In fact, to alert members, we have a further meeting with the agents this Friday, and I hope to make some progress on that before a site visit, if that's what members choose to do. It's true that not all of the site is within the conservation area. In fact, the conservation area was actually designated around the line of the mature trees on both sides of the balk. And those of you who are familiar with this part of the village will know what it's like when you drive down into the village from that point. But to suggest that the development, because it's a metre or two outside of those lines, doesn't have an impact on the conservation area, I think is actually not really credible. So we still have a duty to assess the impact on the setting of the conservation area, which is a statutory duty. It's difficult to do that without some form of detail. So that's where we are currently a little bit of loggerheads, to be truthful. Having said that, this is a site that we promoted. It's a site that we wish to see come forward. And so that's why we're still in this negotiating position, other than having come to you before on the basis, well, we haven't got enough information, so therefore let's recommend refusal of the application. I think whilst we're doing that, it would assist members if they were able to see the site in its context and surroundings. I'm sure many of you are probably familiar with it, but it's not the same as being there and walking it. For example, the design and access statement describes the site as relatively flat. Well, I've cycled fairly sharpish down that hill into the village, so it's how we judge flat, isn't it? Also, at the moment, the design and access statement has houses varying between 2 and 5 bedrooms, but the scale information suggests that every one of them has the same eaves and apex heights. It feels as though it needs some more work yet before we've got to a point where we're confident enough to go forward with an outline planning permission with appropriate controls, so that when a reserve matters does come in, that we've got enough to go with. Because if we don't have enough, then a developer might expect to be able to come in with anything, Chairman. And whilst we can refuse a reserve matters, if the outline hasn't nailed it, you're on the back foot.
Thank you, Gary. From the Chair, I will move a site visit. Do I have a seconder, Councillor Goodrick? Has been moved and seconded for a site visit, so I'll put that to the vote. I've moved and seconded for a site visit. Well, you can tell. Can you not tell us when we get to the site? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded for a site visit. Put that to the vote, please. Councillor Mrs Shields, have you voted? Thank you. That site visit has been approved. We'll arrange a date later on in the agenda. We'll move on to agenda item 9, which is application at Diamond Cottage, Butterwick. Is that Alan?
Thank you, Chair. Item 9 is on page 88 of the agenda. Relates to a plan application for the change of use of a garage to mixed use for self-contained as a residential annex and for holiday let, together with alterations that include the replacement of windows and doors and the installation of two roof lights. Just to run through photos of the application site. The building in question is a single-storey garage at the front of the principal dwelling. This photo's taken facing south from Boynton Lane. You can see that the garage doors on the north facing elevation, they would be retained, and this area at the front of the site would be used for off-street parking. The applicant proposes to push the existing fencing back into the site to allow for additional parking off the road. Diamond Cottage is to the rear in the background of that photo, and on the left hand side is the stone building, which is Orchard Cottage. Again, this is facing south from Boynton Lane, just showing the narrow garden at the front of the site, which would be associated with the use of the converted garage, and just panning round to show how that garden relates to the land associated with Orchard Cottage. This is facing east along that narrow garden, and just show it panning round just to show relationship with the adjoining with the neighbouring resident. So this is a close-up of the north elevation. There will be no alterations to the external appearance of the building, so no impact on the from the road or the street scene. The west elevation, the doorway on the right-hand side would be infilled with brickwork, and the doorway on the left would be retained. Door would be replaced, as would the window, and that would be the main entrance into the annex. There would be one roof light to the rear on this side of the room, this side of the building, that would provide light to the bedroom. This is the south-facing elevation. There would be no changes to this side of the garage, no additional openings or alterations. And this is the eastern side of the building. Here you can see a row of windows, the majority of which would be infilled and rendered, would cover those windows. There would be one window that would remain that would provide light into the kitchen area. In addition, there would be one roof light on this side of the building that would provide light into the kitchen living area. So within the garage, obviously a quite small building, there is a mezzanine floor what is in this photo. This would be where the bed would be, the bedroom. And this is facing the area that inside the building would be used as the kitchen. This is facing east from the windows. These would be infilled, but that's facing onto the boundary with the front garden of Orchard Cottage. And finally, this is just a view out from the door, which would be the main entrance into the converted building. So the main considerations for this application is the impact on residential amenity. An objection has been received from the occupant of Orchard Cottage to the east. They have no objections to the use of the converted building for family or friends. Their concern is the holiday let aspect of the proposal. In terms of noise disturbance, the use of the outdoor areas would not be dissimilar to how they could be used as part of the existing property. Those gardens do form part of the curtilage of Diamond Cottage, but we have added conditions that restrict music in outdoor areas and the use of fireworks. In addition, given the size of the building, it's not anticipated that it would be suitable for large parties. It'd be more suitable for couples. In addition, it would be used on a short-term visitor basis, and there would be conditions that restrict it from being used as a permanent residential property or being sold off or let out separately. There would be no additional windows that would provide views into any adjacent properties, and there are conditions that would require improvements to the boundary hedge on the eastern side and to the rear southern side of the front garden. There are no objections from the Highways Authority, additional parking can be provided on the site for the four vehicles that the expected demand is going to relate to. The principle of the development is acceptable in terms of tourism, and it would provide a flexible use of the building in association with the occupants of the main dwelling. It would contribute to the range and choice of tourist accommodation in the district. The proposed development would not have an unacceptable impact on the appearance or character of the site, residential amenity or highway safety, and it is recommended that permission is granted subject to the 10 conditions as listed in the report.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Page 92, condition 8. It says a scheme of hedgerow planting along the southern boundary of the garden and to the east. Is that right? Because the southern boundary of the garden goes onto the agricultural land at the back. So is that just to the southern boundary of the proposed building, or should it be to the northern boundary, as in to the road?
That relates to the southern boundary of the front garden to the northeast of the garage.
Yeah.
So that hedgerow, it does need gapping up, and that's beyond that hedgerow is the front garden of the neighbouring property.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what that condition
is. Right. Thank you.
Councillor Mrs. Shales.
Chairman, were the earlier photographs taken in the rain or something? Because, frankly, I mean, if you set me down somewhere in Boynton Lane, I wouldn't have a clue what I was to do with that at all. The last ones are okay, but then I don't really know where they are in relation to the rest of it. Might we not possibly have to have a site inspection to clarify this, or unless we can have some better pictures next time? Not blaming the officers, but, I mean, you know, the weather may have been inclement, but, you know, it hasn't left me with any much knowledge of the particular site. I'm sorry.
Thank you. As the officer was presenting, I was saying to Gary, do we need a better camera? And Gary thinks it's the projector that we need, a better projector, because they're actually looking, they look all right on the image on their laptop, looks fine. It's when it gets projected onto there, it looks ghastly. So I have put a big note on the front of here to get something done for next time, because I do take your point. Okay. Councillor Goodwin.
Can I just add to that comment? The brightness of the lights in the chamber actually takes away from that as well. And I've not, like Ms. Councillor Shields, actually I've not seen anything tonight. I've given up looking because I can't see it.
Yeah, I take your point. Yeah. Thank you. Are there any further questions for the officer? No, we shall therefore move into debate. We don't have the local members. Anybody wish to take this one? No. Lovely. Right. I will say I'll move the recommendation. I'm quite happy with the small scale use that's going to occur. The conditions cover everything that I would want to see, so I'll move approval. Councillor Andrews has seconded, so I shall put that to the vote. Thank you. That application has been approved. We shall then move on to agenda item 10, which is St Hilda's House, Main Street, Corton. Is that you, Gary?
It is, I think. Yeah. News delegated it upwards. Bless her. Just bear with me, Chairman. Has he gone? Thank you, Chairman. before just pitching in with some photographs, which I hope we will be able to see, just a couple of updates. And as members will probably have gathered from the committee report, this request for enforcement authority follows on from a recent delegated refusal of planning permission, which was an application for a two-year temporary planning permission for the mixed use of this dwelling as a dwelling and holiday establishment, described as a short-term holiday let. But in essence, the problem has been that this is quite a substantial property, quite a large number of bedrooms, and on occasions, rather than the property being occupied, say, by a family on a holiday let basis, it's being occupied by large groups of supposedly or allegedly stag parties and the like. And on the site, I think originally there was a hot tub, which we think was out in the open, but now seems to have been placed inside the garage, but nevertheless still seems to be a focus for shenanigans and nighttime activity, and probably was one of the quietest areas of Rydale once the lights have gone down. So in essence, we've got a delegated refusal of planning permission, but the use is still ongoing, and it's been ongoing for some time, Chairman, and much to the annoyance of the local residents who live on the immediate or very, very close to this property. So if members are able to just look at, I think it's page, getting the page number now, page 110, which is actually, this is quite a modern property. It was only built a few years ago. As you can see, quite a substantial property. It is actually located in a line of properties within the village of Courton. And because of the use and the antisocial behaviour that's been going on late at night, at times when the ambient noise levels are very low, then we've had quite a number of complaints that led to the enforcement investigation. And despite it leading to an application which has sought to try and regularise things on a short-term basis, the problems appear to have persisted. So we've refused the planning application, and we're now seeking your authority to serve an enforcement notice to secure the cessation of the use. I've got some photos, so fingers crossed. There we go. Alan, if you can just move your head. There you go. So in the line of the village street here, you're coming in from the north there, probably the main approach to the village. You come to the main bend, barn conversion here, and you turn into this village, which well, there's quite a number of newish properties, actually. I think it was really a village formerly of farmsteads, and there have been properties mainly built in this area, and this is probably the most recent of the lot, built in this area here. So you can see either side, right next door to residential property. This is a close-up of it, and that's what it looks like. So outwardly, it's the house that was approved planning permission. It's the use of it that's causing the problem. And this is the back of it. So you can see substantial area, substantial areas for parking of multiple cars. And that's the relationship. That's the nearest neighbouring property, just the other side of the fence. So you can imagine late night activities in this area. So whilst there's some screening on the one side, it's limited. And noise obviously knows no barriers in terms of a little bit of planting. So, to cut to the chase, Chairman, the application was submitted. We still didn't have enough information, and it was just giving us the indication that it was dragging on, and we forced it to a head. I'll draw members' attention to the suggested period for compliance, which is 31 days. That's about as short as we can get it on an enforcement notice. To do that requires no physical alterations to the building. It just requires it to be used as a dwelling house. Or not, as the case may be.
Are there any questions for the officer? Okay, well, I move that we take enforcement action. Can I have a second there, Councillor Goodrick? So I'll just move and second it, so I'll put that to the vote. That has unanimously been approved.
We now move on to agenda item 11. I am conscious that this document was circulated just prior to our arrival tonight, so I would like you just to take a couple of minutes to read this, please, before we go any further. Thank you. Right, we'll move on to agenda item 11, which is 5 Willem Road, Norton. And I believe, Alan, are you taking this one? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members will see on the agenda on page 127, there's a report from the Head of Planning to members in response to an appeal that we've received. The application is 17-01249-FUL. And it was at 5 Wellham Road in Norton, the former Dewhurst site. And the application that members refused in August of last year was for the erection of a petrol filling station with forecourt shop sales building, canopy car parking, 3 number fuel pumps, below ground offset fills, air and water bay, trolley compound, goods in delivery bay, bin storage site, flood lighting and ancillary arrangements to forecourt and boundary. When members considered the application in August, the recommendation was refusal for 2 reasons. These being that there was another site, which is the livestock market site, that was considered sequentially preferable to this application site in both retail and flood risk terms. During the consideration of the application, we did repeatedly ask for more information to justify this application and why it was sequentially preferable, but we did not receive sufficient information to justify the application site. Consequently, we recommended refusal on these 2 reasons, and members of the planning committee agreed and the application was refused. We then received an appeal at the beginning of February against this decision, accompanied by 2 key pieces of new information, one being a sequential flood risk assessment and the other being a report from Mr. Tim Hancock, who is a petrol filling station site finder of some considerable experience, years of experience, which looked into the suitability of the livestock market into great detail, and I think the conclusion from him on just about every factor he looked at was that the livestock market site was not suitable for a petrol filling station. It was too centrally located, the road network was too constrained, and it didn't have sufficient passing traffic, which was the crucial thing with petrol filling stations. They must have a reasonable amount of passing traffic, and a figure that's in the report is between 10,000 and 15,000 vehicles per day. The site, the livestock market site, had 3,726 vehicles per day, so it was somewhere short. The conclusion, therefore, was that the livestock market site was not suitable for the development as proposed, meaning that the application site was then the sequentially preferable site. In consequence to receiving this new information, we did obtain expert retail advice, which confirmed that this report that was submitted with the appeal was right, was fit for purpose, and was reasonable. So too was the flood risk assessment that we received. Consequently, we've been advised not to contest this appeal, and that the new information we've received addresses the reasons for refusal. And I think, crucially, if we'd had this information last year when we brought this application to you, we would have recommended approval to it. I'm not saying that would have been a decision, but that would have been the recommendation. There is another update to the report that was written, and that is a response from a Mr. Graham Connell, which is on page 3 of the late list, and that's on behalf of the Fitzwilliam Estate, and that makes two further points, one being that the application site doesn't meet the 10 to 15,000 vehicles per day passing the site, and the second point is that much of what's said in Mr. Hancock's report requires an in-depth evaluation of that through discussions with the landowner, the Fitzwilliam Estate, before concluding what is concluded. We've passed that to our legal expert, who's concluded it's bringing nothing new to the table that hasn't already been considered, that the site, the livestock market site, isn't considered to be a suitable site for the development. And we're not in the situation where we're comparing the two sites in terms of vehicle flows. What we're looking at is whether or not the livestock market site is suitable or not. Okay. So I've got nothing further to update members with, but I'm sure there'll be questions.
Just before we go into that, I think we can't reinvent history here, so that's the first thing, and that may be a disappointment for people listening in the audience, but these are the facts of the case. We're staring down the barrel of a request for a public inquiry at the moment. The Planning Inspectorate has yet to confirm that is the format of the appeal, which will still proceed, irrespective of what we decide tonight, Chairman, because we've done our job. We did our job last August when we refused the planning permission. But when we refused the planning permission, it was for essentially two reasons, and two reasons alone, both of which were founded in inadequacy of information. One of which was around the flood test, and one of which was around the sequential retail test. And surprise, surprise, 6 months on, and hey presto, with the appeal, we're now finding ourselves looking at two very detailed documents which actually try to address and do address, as far as our experts are concerned, the two reasons for refusal. And that's where we are, Chairman. We're in that invidious position. Officers are as irritated as members are, because that's what we were asking them to do back in August, Chairman. The issue for us, having said that, was at the time, if members recall this, we also had an objection from the Fitzwilliam Moulton Estate via White Young Green, who were arguing very much that their site was a preferable site because of its attributes, the fact that it is in the town centre in effect and had a planning permission and was therefore sequentially preferable to this site, which isn't just a filling station. This is what we don't need to forget. It isn't just a filling station. It's also a retail outlet, which was made apparent at the time was going to be branded as a Marks and Spencers. Although it's run by BP, it's branded as a Marks and Spencers. And there was also a coffee shop in the building. So the attractiveness of this site isn't just based on a petrol filling station, which ordinarily would have X thousand cars on passing trade. There's passing trade and destination traffic. So that's what's been assessed and was assessed at the time. It was assessed at the time, and rightly or wrongly, whatever people think, the Highway Authority raised no objection to this application despite significant transport assessments being provided, and that remains the case. At this stage, we can't introduce new reasons for refusal. So whatever people think about ecology issues or transport issues or parking issues, we are not in a position as a local planning authority to introduce new reasons that we would like to think about now. That doesn't stop third parties doing that, because an appeal of some sorts will still go forward, because a planning inspector will now have to determine the appeal. The issue here is whether we can test the reasons that we put up. And on the basis of what we've put up, we now have two more very detailed documents. We've gone back to the original retail consultant we used, who's basically said to us, and planning expert, that he can't defend it for us and won't. We've also gone back to the same Queen's Council who gave us advice at the time in August, who's basically advised us that he can't see, it's probably the most unequivocal advice I've seen, Chairman. I think one of the phrases was the council has no option other than to resolve not to defend the appeal. It's that strong. So there are clearly implications here. We've taken the best advice that we can, Chairman, and that's what's informed the recommendation for you tonight.
Thank you. We'll move into questions. And Councillor Paul Andrews. Can you put your mic? Thank you.
First of all, the name of the barrister you consulted. Secondly, I would like to know if it's correct that the County Council decided to carry out a study in regard to the traffic in that part of Norton and Moulton after the August planning application was determined.
Well, the name of the barrister, Chairman, I think is not a secret. We used David Manley QC, a barrister very familiar with Moulton. He has assisted us in the local plan context, and I think has also assisted us in occasional Section 78 appeals. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but clearly we needed somebody who was familiar with the locality, and David Manley is based at King's Chambers in Manchester. Yes, Chairman. The connectivity, I'm assuming Councillor Anderson is referring to the connectivity study. I can't think of any other study. Is that correct?
I'm talking about we had a meeting on site, but you walked round with us. Remember, Gary? I understood that as the result of that, a further study was being done by the County Council in regard to measuring traffic and that sort of thing.
Chairman, there's traffic measuring going on continuously. The study work that's being done is a continuation of the connectivity study work that was started because of the level crossing issue and things that were dealt with at St Peter's Church even months, if not years, before that. The County Council, with some input from this District Council, is developing, I think, a model. A traffic flow model. It's a strategic model, in effect, to model suggested alterations to traffic routes around the towns and all sorts of things. That work is ongoing. So the answer to your question is yes, it's ongoing since last August. But we're in a situation where we have to make decisions on planning applications now. So if the planning authority gets an application for something on this site, it will have to determine it on the basis of what the information is before us on this site. So what you get with planning applications rather than strategic models are detailed transport assessments, which is what this application had. And this application, I think I'm right, I'm looking at Alan, had iterations of that work done while it was being assessed. I'll refer to Alan, but so with applications, you get very detailed bits of work done on specific applications. though.
So, but Gary, doesn't that the work that, isn't the work the county is doing at the moment? Doesn't it have to be taken into account before we make a decision of the kind you're asking us to make?
No, I don't think it does. You haven't got that luxury. You've got to make a decision now, a de facto decision now. The Highway Authority has to make a de facto decision now. The inspector will have to make a de facto decision now on what we know now. So you haven't got that luxury. This isn't a policy document or a plan preparation document. This is a planning application. It's a different process. Actually, now it's a planning appeal. And so we're not the planning authority anymore, but we're having to defend the decision we made. The decision we made did not include a highway reason for refusal based on the advice of the Highway Authority. This authority can't introduce a highway reason now. Without severe consequences.
Come back to the barrister. Is David Manley the man who represented the council at the supermarket inquiry in 2012? Was it or 2011? The High Court.
He's represented us on a number of occasions. I can't recall off the top of my head whether he represented it or not. But I've got a feeling that the livestock market decision is on some of the papers. So if you can just give me a few seconds, I can tell you who represented the council. He may have done. He may well have done, but I'm just asking Alan to check. I mean, I think the issue here is that we've, I think, been at pains on all occasions dealing with retail planning to use experienced barristers to represent our case. And if you remember, that particular issue was in a situation where that site was seen at the time as being in competition with Wentworth Street. So there was particular sensitivities about it.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Cleary, you indicated.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think, Gary, you've sort of answered it, but I want to clarify that this committee last year made a decision with the luxury, use your word, the luxury of the information we had at hand. Unanimously, we decided to not only follow the council's the officer's opinion, but our own opinion, and refused it. That surely any new information, any new ideas, should be subject to a new application, not an appeal on the existing. It seems like, in fact, we don't have the luxury, because we made a decision based on the facts before us, and now we've got new information. We don't have new information, but the applicants have got new applicants have got new information that they've got to hand. They're the ones with the luxury. I said it on a different matter before, but we've now got planning by appeal. It wasn't an on-balance decision. It was a unanimous decision based on the facts and based on the recommendation. I think the goalposts have changed, and I'm not a whinger, but it's just not fair.
Chairman, it isn't fair, but this is the system you've got, I'm afraid, so you have to play the cards you dealt with. We operate in a national planning system, okay? The situation is that when we refuse a planning application, we might refuse it for any number of reasons. But in this instance, we refuse the application for what amounts to two reasons, which were on grounds of inadequacy of information. So inadequate information has been submitted. And the way the appeal process works is it enables somebody to then go away for 6 months, mull it over, submit it 2 days before the 6 months was up, which is what happened, and come forward with their best case. We're not involved in that process until that documentation lands on our doormat, and we then have an objective job to make sense of the mess. And actually, what's happened in that period of time is essentially the submission of information, which had we had it last August, as Alan said, my recommendation to you would have been to approve the application. Sorry, but that's what it would have been, because the sequential test would have been passed for retail, the sequential test would have been passed for flooding, there was no highway objection, the 24-hour use was limited to 10 o'clock at night, all of the design issues were all resolved. There was nothing left to refuse it on. In August, there was, because they hadn't made their case. They now have, and that's the dilemma we're in. And I don't like it any more than you do, but that's where we are. And just coming back to Councillor Andrew's point, the barrister was actually not David Manley at this appeal, it was Jonathan Easton.
Pardon? I said the High Court.
Well, I can tell you now that the barrister who dealt with the public inquiry, which led to the cost claim, was Jonathan Easton of King's Chambers, same chambers but different.
Can I come back? Yes, you can come.
May I come back, Madam Chairman? I accept and accept what Gary is saying, but this is a democratically elected committee or committee made of democratically elected people. We played the cards that we were dealt. Somebody else is putting new cards into the game.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Well, Madam Chairman, it seems...
Are we into debate, Chairman?
No, we're in questions.
Is it true then, let's put it this way, that the fact, all the facts about the sighting of this possible proposed garage can no longer really be of any concern to the bodies and to the people who are now trying to dictate to us what we can do. There are a whole lot of people here tonight, and there are more outside, I know, who in fact are really concerned about the actual site. And nobody seems to be thinking of the people of Norton at all. All dealing with other facts that have now come in, when in fact we should be looking at all the problems that currently exist in Norton, from the traffic at the county bridge, all the difficulties that there are in the roads roundabout, and the fact that apparently these seem to be now of no consequence. I pick up in a sense and partly what Councillor Cleary has said. It doesn't really take very much imagination if, in fact, we are no longer able to say we don't want this like we did, like we refused it in last August. And, in fact, if we get the 10 to 15,000 travel passing vehicles in the Wellham Road, then there's going to be absolute hell. I'm sorry, but, you know, it's a bit strong, but it is really going to be totally impossible. And it seems to me that this has been taken out of our hands as the Planning Committee and told what we're going to do and what we have to do, and that people simply don't matter, that you have ignored and are still ignoring all those people in the Wellham Road and all the sales roundabout, and, of course, all the people that are going to come over over the bridge to use the filling station. However, the late letter has come in that Mr. Hunter quoted, talks about the retail outlet very much on that. We're all assuming it's going to be Marks and Spencer's, and that, of course, if in fact it were to take place, would mean, since there is no outlet in, well, there is one in York and Scarborough, there's nothing here. So anybody sort of coming around on a weekend might just think, okay, well, we'll go and have a look at Moulton and Norton and come in, and then we're going to have the sort of chaos all over the weekend, all over again. Now, why are we not being able to stress this? And I know that members of the public here certainly want to do the same thing, when in fact apparently that letter that has come from Mr. Connell or something of that nature says that the application is a dual one. It is not simply the petrol station, it is also for retail, and it's described by this gentleman as a mixed site proposal. And he says, this heightens the importance of addressing sequential test, as there is no imperative that the appeal site should be considered for this kind of development. And finally, the director of the WYG, which you mentioned, the Environment Planning Training
Transport has written, we note that in the local plan sites document main modifications, and in response to the inspector's request that modifications be proposed to make the plan sound, the Dewhurst site, that's the appeal site, is no longer included as a defined retail site. Well, if it's not a retail site, then BP can't have it, or they're going to have to prove in some other way with other tests that it is so. And that's as far as I can get, and that was the thing that came late and was a very interesting letter and has been well thought out by somebody, director in Headingley, I think, who knows exactly what he's talking about. So I want to know why we can't follow this up instead of just being told now you've got to do A or you've got to do B, and then having thrown at us the fact that, well, it's going to cost the council, of course, if in fact if you don't follow it. You know, naughty children, if you don't actually turn around and do exactly what we want you to do. But most of us, I think, want people and think of people, and they are the most important things for all of us, rather than money, and that's a very serious matter. And I'm going to end up at the moment, Madam Chairman, by suggesting that many of the members here, I think I'm right, have never actually seen this site and probably not been inside it. I haven't been inside it for a while, I admit, I don't know exactly where it is. Should have a look at this, and that we defer this altogether and have a site meeting, and then come back, look at any other information that's around, and then make a decision on it.
Chairman, there's quite a lot I need to come back on there. Firstly, members have site visited this site in the past in dealing with planning applications. We site visited when we had an application for a day nursery at the back of the site, which still remains the case. The reason, but what's being confused here, and I need to come back on it again, and the inspector's modification is deleting the retail allocation, because at the time the plan went forward, there was still an extant retail planning permission on the site, so it had to reflect it. That's expired by about 3 months. But prior to that, there was a planning permission for an oldie store the size of Lidl on there, with a day nursery on the back of it. There was also, when that appeared to have dropped off the end of the cliff, we then got a building with a floor area pretty much the same for 3 non-food retail units on the front of it with a Charles Day nursery. I can remember the Dewhurst factory as was not necessarily in operation, but it being horribly vandalised, windows smashed, and getting complaints from all the local residents around that it was a den of iniquity, teenagers smashing things and all the rest of it. So whatever you do on this site, you can't win. But what I can tell you is, it's a brownfield site in a flood zone, or in a flood zone, which is why we went through the sequential test. It's very close to the town centre development limits, but just outside of it. That's why it failed the sequential test without the information to suggest why it was better. And we've now got all that. So you've got nothing left. You've got no highway objection. You've got no in-principle objection because of all the permissions that have gone before, and effectively nothing's changed the situation. And yes, we did look at it as a mixed use. We had big rows with the applicants who were trying to say, no, 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 you can't do it. Well, we looked at it as an entity, as did the Highway Authority. So there was the passing trade issue, but there was also the destination traffic as well. And we had big ups and downs with them about that. That's how the Highway Authority assessed it. So they assessed it as a holistic thing, that it will attract people who want to go shop because there's a Marks and Spencer's badge on the front door, and they did go public with that. It's all run by BP, but it's an M&S franchise, so they went public with that. And I think there's a Wild Bean Cafe inside it as well. It's not all of the building, but that's what the plans show. And a sizeable forecourt. It's on a site that has better passing trade than the livestock market, so it's sequentially preferable. You've got nothing left. Our own in the let me finish. In the landscape, in the agenda papers, you have a further report from England Lyle Good, who are the planning experts that we have used to advise us on this. They are acknowledged retail experts. They also generalists, but they give retail expert advice. On the basis of that advice, as soon as we read it, we thought we're in trouble. And so we went back to the legal advisor who we've used in the past. I'm happy to elaborate on that, but we might need to go to exempt if you want me to. And I've got pretty much the most unequivocal advice that we haven't got a leg to stand on. When you're in that territory, alarm bells should be ringing when you're dealing with a retail planning application.
Councillor Goodrick.
Two questions. Who currently owns the site? BP own the site, so they've bought the site. And we couldn't compulsory purchase it off them.
We were determined the application. It was previously owned by Scotham Construction.
Right.
They own the site.
Councillor Andrews.
One other question, Gary. Yeah. England Lyle and Co. Were they the consultants who advised the council in regard to the second application for Wentworth Street car park, which went to the High Court?
I can't remember, Councillor Andrews.
I think they were, you know.
I can't remember, Chairman. But you'll remember, Chairman. I mean, putting that in context, we won at the High Court on Wentworth Street. We lost at the Court of Appeal, so that's the courts for you. It went one way and the other. So, you know, advice. Once you've taken advice to the courts, who knows?
Are there any further questions for the officer before we move into debate? Even though we've mixed and matched a bit, but we'll... And then we have the matter of exempt to... Do members want to move into exempt? Okay, well, I'll move exempt.
I cannot see how you can possibly move into exempt. We're talking about the planning. We're talking about the merits of the planning application and the merits of the planning merits at the moment. When we're talking about council's advice, then perhaps we will go into exempt. But there's no reason why the public should be excluded from hearing what we're going to say. No reason at all.
I'm afraid there is, if members ask. All I asked, Councillor Andrews, was whether members wanted to go into exempt. I hadn't got a mover, I hadn't got a seconder, I got no further than that, and you were already unhappy. Please, just, we're trying to keep calm here. It's a difficult situation we're all in, and I know we're not all exactly happy about this, but there is a process, and that's what we're going, Councillor Potter has now indicated.
Can we just have clarification as to why we would need to go into exempt, please?
Well, just to come back on Councillor Andrews' point, I think if you're still staying in planning merit, then you don't need to go into exempt, clearly. But if you want to go into exempt in terms of what the implications of not following the recommendation are, then I think that's where you need to look at it, because we're in the grounds, on the realms of the advice I've been given, it's unreasonable. And for that, alarm bells ring for costs. And at that point, we go into exempt.
Thank you. Right, we are now in debate. Does anybody want to start the ball rolling in debate? Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm very disappointed, like Councillor Cleary. I think this is just planning by appeal. We are told as a committee that we have to consider what's put in front of us. And last August, that's exactly what we did. We considered what was put in front of it, and we unanimously voted against this. And I, for one, am very disappointed that we are in this position where a party can come back with information in this manner and actually defeat this. That we spoke, we made a decision, and actually I think we need to stick by it. I'm uncomfortable with it. I think the whole application is premature because we're still waiting on the connectivity study. We've got a 7.5-ton weight limit on County Bridge, which is under consideration. We've got an air quality management action plan, which would be affected if we had extra traffic, 10 to 15,000 movements of traffic. They're never going to get across the railway crossing, let alone get to the petrol station. We've got no holistic consideration of any of these issues. And I understand what Gary's saying. We defended it on the grounds that we didn't have the information, but there are other extenuating services, circumstances which should be put forward, which would mean that this should be refused.
Councillor Potter, you indicated next.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I was rather confused about this whole issue when I was reading it, thinking, why would we not appeal this? And at the risk of repeating what just about everybody else has said, this is an absolute disgrace. It is an absolute disgrace from start to finish. I was quite happy to oppose the original application on so many reasons, just about every reason. Flood. What's the point of having sequential and exception tests when you've got a site that's clearly a major flood risk, and then at the end of it you say, well, yeah, it's all right, we'll develop it anyway. The supermarket traffic, the impact, the air quality, the congestion. There couldn't be a worse place to put this development than where it is, other than perhaps Morrison's. Well, that's history as well. The problem I now see from what I've heard, and on a purely pragmatic basis, we do not have a leg to stand on to oppose this. So what's the point in opposing it purely on the grounds that we have no opposition? But it's just a ridiculous situation where I can't bring myself to have this authority sit at that inquiry to try and challenge something that we know perfectly well is not challengeable. But then we don't have the ability to raise anything else. And all the other issues that just about every member present would all agree that we're opposed to. And it's just a ridiculous situation where I can't see that we have any ability as an authority to oppose this appeal. So, yeah, ridiculous, but that's all I can say, I'm afraid.
Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chair, I'm afraid I disagree with Councillor Potter. I think we do have reasons to oppose this application and to oppose the appeal. I'll read it out because I think it's quite complicated, and I hope members will bear with me if I do. There are three points. First, in regard to flooding, the argument is that flood risk assessment test has been satisfied. However, the only comparison made is between the livestock market site and the appeal site. It is stated that the livestock market site is unsuitable in terms of the application of the flood risk sequential test. However, the report goes on to say, officers must satisfy themselves that there are no other suitable sites within Moulton to accommodate the proposed development at lower risk of flooding than the appeal site. I can find nothing in the report to suggest that officers have even looked at other alternatives. I can't believe there are no other suitable sites for a petrol station. What about Brambling Fields? And I think Councillor Keel has listed a whole series of possibilities in her statement. The second point concerns retail. And we have the Council's consultant, Mr. Swarbrick. On page 129, his report states, the proposals relate to the erection of a petrol filling station with an associated forecourt retail unit with a total GIA of 495 square metres. In view of the nature and the scale of the proposed retail unit and the associated level of car parking, we are of the opinion that it would not remain ancillary to the fuel sales element. I repeat, that it would not remain ancillary to the fuel sales element and would be a shopping destination in its own right. On this basis, we are of the opinion, that's just the council's consultant speaking, that the key policy test would be applicable in this instance despite the contentions of the appellant. Moreover, we are satisfied that the livestock market site would be regarded as a sequentially preferable location to the appeal site. However, Mr. Swarbrick then goes on to qualify what he's just said. He says that he then goes on to say that the LMS site is not suitable for a petrol station. So, what I cannot understand, therefore, is why the officers have not asked the applicant to reduce the size of the retail element to a size which would remain ancillary to the fuel sales element. It would seem to me that to do otherwise would be to be seen to be breaking our own Rydale plan policy, and that policy recognises the LMS site as the sequentially preferred site for retail. The third point relates to highways. And the point is made that the livestock market site has a vehicle flow of 3,726 vehicles a day, whereas the appeal site now has a flow of over twice as many. I think it's 7,000 something or other. The report then goes on to say that the proposed development requires a flow of vehicles of between 10,000 to 15,000 a day, presumably because the greater the flow, the greater the economies of scale. Now, members, please bear in mind that traffic flows through the day are not regular, but the traffic flows become concentrated and congested during the rush hours of morning, midday and evening, and on either side of those rush hours. This means doubling traffic movements in the area of the level crossing. Now, we are all aware of the traffic issues which already exist at the level crossing. We know the air quality issues at Butcher Corner and the roads leading to it. We are aware of the issues in regard to the HGV restriction and the change of priorities at the level crossing and the knock-on effects these have on the road network in other parts of both towns. The council has made representations to County Council, and the County Council has acknowledged these issues and is currently doing a study, which we've already talked about. Now, I find it unbelievable that we are actually even contemplating doubling the quantity of traffic at this time, when we're waiting the outcome of the study. In my view, Chair, the application should be deferred. The application and the appeal should be deferred until a study by the county has been completed. It has been suggested that it is too late to do this, as county made no highways objection in the first instance. However, this was before county highways undertook to carry out this study. And I am advised that it is possible to take into account new facts which have arisen after the decision on an application in a planning appeal. I believe that if the appellant is asked to defer the appeal until the outcome of the County Council study, that would be a reasonable request, and they would be acting unreasonably if they refused, and this would count against any application that they might make in regard to costs. Now, I have at the back of the room a very eminent planner. Stand up, please, Mike William. Mike William was the County Planning Officer of Bedfordshire from 1987 to 1994, the Director of the Civic Trust from 1994 to 2000, and the Regional Director of Planning and Transport of the South East of England between 2000 and 2006. He ought to know what he's talking about, and he has asked me to make these points tonight, and I've read this statement to him tonight before I finalised it. My proposal is, therefore, that the officers defer this item and invite the appellants to defer their appeal until after the County Council study is completed, made public and duly considered by this committee. Do I have a seconder for that?
Yes, I'll second that.
I don't have anybody else wishing to speak or that's indicated to speak. However, I know we're in debate, but I am going to take the decision that Gary does need to come back on some of those points on this occasion that Councillor Andrews has just come forward with. So I am going to let Gary come back on this occasion.
It's just on a matter of precedence.
All the points that he's made before and repeated
right,
several
just
times already.
Councillor Andrews, please treat me with some respect.
Coming back on
a procedural point of order relating to a potential public inquiry. There is no prospect of a delay with the appellant. The planning inspectorate is waiting for us to contact them tomorrow for us to tell them what you've decided. Deferral is not an issue. Okay, so we don't have that luxury. We're in a national planning system. The decision will be made by a planning inspector, irrespective of what you choose to do tonight. The risks of what you choose to do tonight we might discuss later, but that's the issue. The planning inspectorate has already delayed for this committee to take the report we've prepared for you, so you consider it and decide how you wish to react. The planning inspectorate has already delayed what it would have already set in train had we not had the agreement of the appellant to this meeting and considering this report tonight. But I can tell you now, the appellant is not for changing this scheme. It always was the scheme that it is. It's a hybrid application. It's partly a filling station. It's partly a shop. It partly relies on passing trade. It will partly be a destination. Sometimes the two will mix. That's what's been assessed. They're not changing this proposal. If you think they are, you're kidding yourselves. And that's what we've got to consider tonight. So hopefully that hasn't raised anything new, Councillor Andrews.
Chair.
Councillor Cleary, it's you indicated next.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I'll be brief. So if in your own, you can go back to Councillor Andrews. It's not so much a part of the debate other than a... I don't know whether you call it an apology or a vote of thanks to our officers. I hope they and the people in the room realise that our disgust with the situation, to use or whatever, is not directed at the officers. It is at the system that we are being put upon with. And I just wanted to make that clear that our feelings are not directed at the officers. So thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, and I am grateful for you pointing that out. Councillor Windrus, I will come to you because you haven't spoken yet in the debate, and then Councillor Andrews, I will be coming back to you, okay? Councillor Windrus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Unfortunately for us as a planning committee, Highways have not put in an objection. What this and other applications on tonight's agenda show is that what Highways may not have a problem with is not necessarily what we as locally elected members have a problem with, but we are tied as Highways are the experts. We cannot go against what Highways say, simple as. So I will move officer recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak? We'll come back to you then, Councillor Andrews.
Chair, I was only going to make. Okay. I agree incidentally with Councillor Cleary what he was saying. I do agree with that. So I hope that will be understood. But the point I want to contest, I'm not saying we have the power to defer anything. What I'm saying is we should carry on and we should invite the other side to defer the appeal. And the appeal can be deferred. It can be put off if both sides agree. And that's the motion which I've proposed, and that's the motion that Councillor Shields has seconded.
Unfortunately, it's Hobson's choice. There isn't a choice. They can win. They're not going to defer this because they want this more than we do. They're not going to defer it. They can go to appeal. Given the grounds, they'll win the appeal. It'll cost us a load of money to defending what has become indefensible. And I'm as disappointing as everybody for all the reasons that I gave out. I'm not happy. I would move that we compulsory purchase the site if I thought we could to prevent it, but I don't think we can.
I'm at a loss for words, really. It's we are where we are, not where we want to be. You know, I know the applicant appellant is in the room, and I will say we are disappointed that you didn't put that information in when you were asked to put that information in. I think it is a bit of a low blow that you've done what you've done. I think you should have been bold and done it in the beginning when officers asked you to do it. However, you know, we haven't got that luxury anymore. we refused the application on the grounds that we did. That information has now miraculously appeared, and we are where we are, and so unfortunately I am in the position of seconding the officer recommendation. It has been moved and seconded to go with the officer recommendation, and therefore I will put it to the vote. It has been agreed to go with the officer recommendation. We shall now move on to agenda items.
Can I say, Chairman? I will be encouraging.
I am going to move on to agenda item 12, which is any other business, which is to set the site visit date for the So the site visit date, I am looking for the 2nd of April. Is that convenient with anybody? 2nd of April. That is the day after the 1st of April.
Sure,
well done. And we're going for a 9:30. Is that okay, Elizabeth? Yep, 9:30 on the 2nd of April at Slingsbury. Agenda item 13 is a list of applications determined under delegated powers. Agenda item 14 is an appeal. Does anybody?
I didn't get the number 13 on my.
You didn't get number 13 on your planning agenda?
Correct. That's what.
Let's be fair and say that actually nobody did. Okay? So
well,
we shall.
Do any.
So maybe we'll amalgamate those
well,
to the
I
next
shall
agenda.
Well, I shall speak very severely to Karen Hood tomorrow and ask them to be circulated. I'm sure we must have done something in the last 4 weeks.
Agenda item 14 is the appeal. Gary, is there anything you'd like to say?
Yes, this was. Members may recall this. This was sort of like a little mini estate on the north side of Ruffer Lane at Pickering. Second application, actually, this one was, and they'd taken to trying to conceal the dwellings in the hillside by digging a big hole to hide them in, and then didn't want to do the archaeology. So that was quite an interesting discussion in the debate, that the inspector actually concluded they should have done an archaeological dig before proceeding, but they wouldn't. The sort of health warning on this decision note, it's a very good decision, was on paragraph 26. Not sure if anybody saw that, but it's basically saying there's agreement between parties, the council can demonstrate a supply in excess of 5 years. The housing supply position does not therefore trigger the tilted balance arising from paragraph 11D of the framework, which is the presumption in favour of granting planning permission if you haven't got 5 years. It is important to note, however, that the presence of a 5-year supply of housing is not a ceiling, and the provision of general needs housing is nonetheless a significant material consideration in the light of the framework's support of the government's objective of significantly boosting the supply of homes. This is a factor that weighs in support of the proposal. However, the boost to housing supply would not be outweighed by the other harms. I think what that does tell us is we really need to get the sites document adopted because obviously that it's still under examination. And with that in mind, just to tell you that the modification 6-week period ended yesterday, so we've sent everything off today that's come in, not that a lot came in, and the inspector was chasing it, so she was sort of, I can only read that as she's ready to to maybe finalise her report for us to get something to adopt. So that would be really useful. Then we've effectively got a complete plan. Then really the next thing is, well, we're already 6 years into the strategy, so we're having to almost immediately start reviewing the plan. So that's really a heads up for sort of late summer, early autumn, that Jill and her colleagues, Rachel and others, will be probably doing some member engagement on what you like, what you don't like, what we need to be looking at going forward, all those sorts of things, before we start pitching in on the new plan. So that could range from the housing figure to what you think of the local needs occupancy condition, you know, all that sort of stuff. The answer to that simply will be yes, because we're already on with the parking study now. The strategy for the connectivity studies, I mean, is tending to be how we've looked at the strategic transport assessments, but have just been in the past for Moulton, Norton, and for the more recent plan, partly in Pickering around the Ropery Junction. So anything that's sort of got a strategic plugging in and unplugging of sites, which, as I understand it, the new model that's being developed, almost finished now, as I gather, but that's like the model finished, it's got to be validated and reality checked, if you like, and then trying things like bigger one-way systems or, you know, whatever it might be, because until you've got the model tested, you can't rely on the results it's pumping out. I think that'll be fairly key for the market towns, because obviously the market towns get expanded and expanded and expanded, but they're all based around medieval road patterns. So you come to a point where you can't just keep expanding without needing, you know, strategic roads or whatever it might be. So I think that will increasingly become the case as we get on with the plan. How long the plan takes to review, or whether it's partial reviews, we've yet to decide how we go about that yet. So I think, you know, we'll be getting down to discussing things like the settlement hierarchy, whether you want something beyond the service village level or not, what the proportions might be in the towns. You know, all of those things are up for consideration to roll the plan forward. So it's quite a big piece of work we'll be setting on. Well, as vague as, you know, sort of late summer is probably what we're looking at. I think at this stage, we're in the hands of the inspector getting this plan adopted and signed and sealed first. Looking at the, which can only be done by council, it's a council adoption. So I think we're probably looking at a new council, is what I think we're looking at. But there's something about that, I think, the new council adopting and then starting launching on a new document.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for your input tonight. There's been some difficult discussions. Thank you for bearing with us, and have a safe journey home.